This season at the First Time Podcast, we are returning to our first time roots. We hear all the time from listeners who've gone from thinking about writing a book to starting to write a book to having their very own debut author experience.
One of the things that these new authors say is that they've gone back and listened to all the episodes that cover off the various milestones. So this year we're going back too. We want to capture that first time again ourselves. We're going to follow a first time author across the year, catching up multiple times along the way.
Our very first follower first timer is Megan Rogers, author of The Heart is a Star. This segment of Follower First Timer is brought to you by HarperCollins. Megan Rogers, we're back.
Hello, beautiful people.
Hello to you.
Hello.
This feels like a bit of a special episode because we started catching up with you in March of this year before your debut, The Heart is a Star, came out. Now it's October. You've done it. The book is in the world. And this is the last time we're catching up for this series.
I know. I almost feel really sentimental about this whole thing.
I love that you are in the car. We've spoken to you now at school pickup, in bed, in various places across the whole year, 8 huge episodes, and you have talked about you, your writing process, your writing journey, that little book that you had that you made when you were a kid. You've talked about editing. You've talked about social media, the launch events, all of the feels. But this week you wanted to do something a little bit different and you put a call out to listeners.
I did. Yeah, I started to feel, and I think maybe all writers, I can't say that actually, I started to feel, I can only speak for me, that I was just starting to, first of all, tell the same stories over and over again, and I could almost feel my 11-year-old in the background rolling her eyes at me, you know, if she was ever listening to me. But also too that I started to feel a bit anxious about talking anymore about myself. I start to feel really kind of self-indulgent and also too curious to see whether or not the information that I am providing is actually useful in any way. You know, I don't know. So I wanted to more make the content, I guess, about, you know, final questions and any, you know, things that I hadn't shared that might actually help, you know, well, you know, or empower or whatever the word is, any listeners.
Well, you got a great response. We are not going to get to all of the questions here today, but we've bundled them up and hopefully we touch on all, if not, we touch on most of the themes, if not all of the themes. First question that's come in from listeners, what was the best decision you made when you were trying to get published?
Ah, yeah. And actually, something I did want to do because I went to a couple of events recently and a few people came up to me and I started to realize that, you know, because perception is reality, right? And often you're almost during this process are like a pantomime version of yourself. Like I'm kind of wheeled out and here's the Megan who is the writer who tells the stories about these books, right? And I started to realize from people's questions to me at events sometimes that I think they thought that I was much more connected in the publishing world than I definitely was or was not. So I think I just wanted to, you know, be really honest and make it clear that I know it sounds, you know, yes, I worked as an editorial assistant like 50,000 years ago and I've done the courses at RMIT and all those types of things. You know, when I actually got to the point where I sat down to write a novel, you know, I'd been a working from home mum in kind of marketing and comms, not book related at all, for, you know, 15 years, completely out of the scene, hadn't gone to kind of any events and really wasn't connected at all. And I really want to make that clear because I think one of the really important things about my story is I honestly believe that, you know, anyone can do it. And I don't feel any different as a person sitting here now, you know, episodes and episodes down with the book out than I did when I was sitting in my pantry with my girls screaming, doing remote learning, that person and her abilities maybe have grown a little bit, but they're not vastly different, right? And I think sometimes we can look, and I was guilty of this, look at published writers and you see them, and probably we do the same with musicians and sports people, and that they're so other, they're kind of the other. And, you know, when, so the best decision that I ever made to get published was, and I'll get to that in a second, but I just wanted to make it really clear that I really just went out on a whim and sent it out, and this is the best decision I ever made. So I wanted to write a book for a long time, but the best decision I ever made was realizing when I wanted it enough, because I always wanted it and I was writing and my writing wasn't bad. But the thing is that what I found, and I can only answer for me, that it takes such stamina. And, like, you know, there's a beautiful quote by one of my favorite writers, Ta-Nehisi Coates, I think he's being interviewed by The Atlantic. And he says that, you know, writing a novel is the ultimate act of endurance. And I think that if I had sent out a novel earlier, like if I'd kind of cobbled something together and sent it out, I would have probably received a lot of rejections, because I wasn't ready to put in the work. And it wasn't until, you know, a lot of things happened in my life where I was so hungry for it. Like, I almost felt like I was kind of writing for my, I won't say writing for my life, because that's really dramatic, and with everything going on in the world, that sounds really stupid. But I really came to a point in my life where, in my mind, you know, there was some really sad things happening, and I just wanted to give it a shot. And I wanted to show my girls me giving it a shot. And I just wanted it. I was so, so hungry for it. And that hunger and that desire made me put in so many hours of work and just draft and draft and draft and draft. And so the best decision that I made was to really identify when I was really, really, really hungry for it. And I think that hunger turned into a capacity to put in the work, both kind of mentally and emotionally, to craft it into something that was ready to send out. And then really it was just, you know, the other thing was getting the balls to, you know, or the, I shouldn't say that, getting the vagina to send it out. You know, it's, you know, having the guts to do that is terrifying, as we all know. And I did believe in my heart it was kind of, and I know this isn't true, but I felt like it was kind of my last shot, because I would sacrificed so much to write the book, and I probably couldn't have done that again. And so, you know, it was just getting the courage to send it out to someone.
Love that. Great answer. I love these next ones about stuckness.
Oh, yeah. Did I like the way they worded it too. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you and do you ever have moments of being stuck in your writing? And the person has asked, both creatively and emotionally stuck. And the next one is, how do you not allow stuck to become overwhelmed and then overwhelmed to become paralyzed?
Yeah, I don't. I don't know how to stop that. You know, I thought when I saw some of these questions, I'm like, I don't know if I'm the best person to ask. But
because
no,
because you don't get stuck, or because
I get stuck.
Yeah, okay.
Oh yeah. I think I look, and again, like, this is just my own personal thing, but one of the things that for me personally, I myself as a writer have had to become really, really radically honest with myself and radically self-aware, because I think you can't really live in any delusion when you're a writer. Maybe that's the difficulty, because you're up against yourself all the time. You're up against your own limitations, both craft-wise, time-wise, and you know, just in the capacity to, I guess, do what you want to do. And actually, going back to the Ta-Nehisi Coates, he always talks about writing a book as an ultimate act of failure, right? Because you have this image in your head about what it's going to be, and then nearly always you sit down and write it, and it's not that. It's the what you have in your head, and then what it appears at, like, you know, your job, I guess, is to draft and draft and draft until it's like, you know, 70% there, right? And so that radical honesty with yourself, for me, has been the fact that I often feel and live in cycles. And what I have found stops that process is trying to put a dam in it. So if I'm starting to feel overwhelmed or stuck, sometimes the worst thing I can do is pretend I'm not, and to try to kind of put a band-aid on it, because I find that ultimately I'm going to cycle through the block and the overwhelm and the paralysis. That is, and I loved the way that they had worded that, because that's essentially, that's almost what I feel like my cycle is. And the faster I can allow myself with love to cycle through that, the sooner I will come out the other end, and the sooner I will be able to come back and write again. And ultimately, there is something about that cycle and allowing it to happen with a little bit of self-love that is almost like a cleanser. It's like, you know, having mineral water in between. What if I have coffee or something? You know, it's a palate cleanser. Or it's like a bushfire. It's like a fire, right? And it'll clear out whatever shit is going on in me, whether it's self-doubt, whether I'm having stuff emotionally with people around me, there's stuff, right? And the best thing I can do is just allow that to happen, allow that fire to move through me, and then to trust the fact that on the other side, I will come out kind of clearer and more able to turn back to the page. And so I guess that's the answer to that question. And then the other thing I would say, though, is so that's the internal kind of process and tools that I don't always have, but I try my hardest. And then my external ones is that whenever I'm writing, I say that like I've written 5 books, whenever I write my novels, obviously I can't.
It's such a long thing to produce, though, yeah. Right? Like, I think we all feel a little bit like that we don't have like, N is two, or, you know,
right, that's,
we've only produced a couple, but there's many, many days that go and many, many sessions so that go many into days. It. So I think you can make
what
that claim.
What I can say, that's so true, I guess, is that I have two things and have gone into this next book with two things, and that is what I call anchors and boats. So I have anchors, and they are usually a stack of books which get to the heart of what this book is about, and I had for heart. So they could be tonal, like tone of voice kind of anchors. It could be, for some reason, I just read it and it just encapsulates the feeling that I want to convey. They could be nonfiction as well. Like, they could have a lot of the information, like, you know, I might have something about navigation for the first book or whatever. And I also have music and images and so forth. And you know, I think a lot of writers do this, that are real anchors. So whenever I feel I'm drifting away from that, you know, the focus that is required for a novel, then I'll come back to those anchors. And sometimes, you know, when you are a bit stuck, you know, those things can help for me, that process. So that's, I guess, about... for me, there's kind of two types of stuck. There's like stuck when you need to come back to the text, and stuck when you need to invigorate the text. So if I'm stuck and it's because the way that I am, I often go down rabbit holes of like research. I'm like, yeah, I can do this. And why didn't she do this? And then she can travel here. And I'm like, Megan, I did this in my PhD, so just stop. And often too, like, you know, my supervisors and everything in my past, you need to just, you know, cut it down. So I can get stuck in that. And so then I come back to the anchors and go, okay, just strip it back. What is this really about? And then other times I get stuck because I'm like, oh, it's just falling short, or it's flat, or, you know, I'm just seeing the same things every day. I'm packing lunch boxes and I'm going to school and I'm on a work meeting and stuff like that. So then I have things that are like boats to me. So and that is about kind of, and this is the artist's way kind of thing, you know, the kind of artist date things. So I will just literally, you know, find something in my area that I can go to that will hopefully kind of be a catalyst for something. And it just needs to change my daily routine almost. You know, music is a really big part of my writing, so I might just literally put, you know, songs on random and try to listen and, you know, move my body in some capacity, whether that be to run or to walk or to do yoga or to dance like an idiot around the house, or, you know, just, or play with the kids, you know, physically. I think too, that can be a really good thing. Just wrestle with them or like get physical to move and to create something different in me. You know, paintings and art forms and all that kind of stuff. And I think sometimes people are boats as well, aren't they? Like, I have these people in my life who act as like boats, and I'll sit and listen to them and I'll just think, oh my God, you're just so amazing. And they'll always make me just think about things in a different way. So
I love that. So we've talked a little bit about writing process. If we circle back to the book, The Heart is a Star, it grapples with some pretty challenging topics. Can you talk a little bit about the balance between challenging a reader and taking care of a reader?
Oh yeah, I love this one too. That was really good. And I kind of read it and went, that is like, I almost wish that I'd asked myself that question like in the beginning of writing. What a beautiful way to articulate it, right?
I think it's a great question. I mean, not one that applies to every book necessarily, but I can really see the line you've had to walk within this one.
Yeah, and I think even though it's, I think maybe it's a question that every writer articulates without knowing, maybe, because I think that you know, we have all these ingredients as writers and choices that we make in the beginning to do with structure, themes, tone of voice, even perspective and point of view and stuff like that. And we make those choices, I think, either knowingly or unknowingly, based upon the type of story we want to convey. So I think that sometimes, and I don't think any way is, you know, there's no right or wrong to this, right? We all know that. There's no right way or wrong way to write a book. You know, if you, I think there are some books where their job is to support a reader through a story and to take them on a journey. And that's it. You just want to be taken out of your life, and that's their job. They're safe hands. You know, it's like the goalkeeper in a soccer match. You just want them to be safe hands. That's what you want. You just want them to take you through that journey. And I think that's a really beautiful and valid thing. And I think on the other end of the spectrum, there are books which really challenge us for various reasons. And that could be structurally, it could be thematically, it could be writing in the second person and putting someone, you know, there are a lot of amazing short stories and novels putting the reader into the shoes of people doing terrible things, right? Saying you. So when we make those craft decisions, I think that that spectrum of taking care of and challenging, we make decisions based upon where we want our book to sit, right? And so, you know, when I started writing Heart, even though, you know, made me actually reflect on this a lot, because even though I may not have thought about it as articulate, it was a very articulate way to think about it actually. You know, when I was making the decisions that I made craft-wise, so, you know, one of the decisions I made was to put it in first person. And as soon as you put something in first person, you make it so much more immediate. And it was present tense, right? So first person, present tense, it's so much more immediate. So any emotion or experience that that character is going through, that the reader is going to be there. And so that can be really confronting and really challenging. And, you know, I went into it kind of knowing that, and knowing that that was part of the story, because I wanted, you know, the reader to be uncovering things as the character was. And also, you know, I wanted the reader to be able to have access to things in the character that you can't have if it's not in first person ordinarily. And then, you know, thematically, I did choose, you know, quite, heavy topics. I'm quite obviously that didn't go over my head. You know, that was something that I knew that I was doing. You know, I think that was for a few reasons. I think that on one hand, you know, my favorite books, you know, like A Thousand Acres and Shipping News and What I Loved and English Patient and, you know, all of these books have various aspects of very heavy trauma with a capital T stuff in it. And they were the books that I fell in love with, you know, in the 90s when I was kind of cutting my teeth on things a bit. And it's just the type of books and stories that I gravitate towards. So there's an element of just kind of the reader in me as well. But also too, I wanted to, you know, I'm not a stranger to hard things, and I don't talk about my own personal stories. The book is not in any way autobiographical, but I think thematically, you know, I haven't lived a life which has been a stranger to some heavy things. And so, and the same with friends I know and so forth. And I think as a person, I have always gravitated towards having those conversations with people, and I guess investigating is the wrong word, really ruminating on the darkness in life and you know what that says about us in many ways and how we traverse those times. And I do believe that by talking about it and shedding light on it, then we do reduce the shame. You know, stories shared and brought to life are stories that don't have as much shame attached to it anymore. So there was an element to which, for me personally, in storytelling, I think that's important, not for all novels, not for all writers, but just for me personally.
Thank you, Megan. That's a beautiful answer. The next one from a listener is about success. And this is really interesting because, of course, success looks different to different people. And for some people, especially with their debut, success is getting it published. And then there's all these other objective markers of success. And so for you, beautifully, this book, The Heart as a Star, has enjoyed commercial success. So the question is, in hindsight, which activities do you think had the most impact on the success of this book? And this person has asked, maybe writing articles, visiting bookshops, etc.
Yeah, and you're right. And when I read that and a question initially, and you actually touched on something important, is like, what is success? And almost, I probably should have gone back to clarify, like, what do you mean by success, so I can be, I can answer this properly. You're right. Look, my, yes, look. Initially, of course, you know, the success was getting it published. And the really interesting thing about this journey is that my markers of success changed as I went along. Because, you know, you get published and you're like, oh my God, amazing. And it's so incredible. And then, of course, then the goalposts move, you know, and they move. And suddenly you're like, oh, you know, I'd really like to get a good review. I'd really like to, you know, sell enough books so that, you know, it's, you know, I have some chance at least of keeping writing and so forth. So
it's incredible how quick that changes too, doesn't it? Like, we have,
oh my God,
appetite. It's not even conscious.
You're no, just like, okay, and there is no controlling it. As much as you think you can control it, there is no controlling it.
There's no controlling it. No. And I was really lucky to get, I think, you know, and maybe it's the different parts of your personality which does judge success differently. Like, I think the kind of, you know, the writer in me that's studied, right, and this isn't to sound wanky, and I'm really, really going to try not to sound like a wanker here, but you know, there was an element to which I felt very lucky that the critical reviews were good, and so I was for me personally as a writer was really reassuring, I think, because you know, we all want to be seen, don't we, and we all want to have some level of reassurance that we have some capacity to do our job. Maybe that's the way of thinking about it. So, you know, for me, you know, reading those things was really reassuring. And it's a really good question, because I thought, this is one of the ones that I thought really deeply about, because I wanted to give as honest an answer as I could. And I really tried to kind of think about each step along the journey and what really, you know, what helped the most. And I got to the point where I realized that, you know, like Get Smart where he's walking through the doors and they're like, oh, do people out there know what a guest man is? Hoping that they
I
don't.
do,
Anyway,
but
show,
some
right?
people
The
will.
doors. YouTube it. Anyway, he's walking through this thing and the doors are opening, closing. And to the music. And I started to realize that at every single point along my journey, whether it was when I sent it to an agent, whether when it was sent to publishers and so forth, that the thing that attributed to things happening, whether you think them as successful as not, was an individual reading it and for whatever reason liking it. And so, you know, first of all, that was my agent, then it was the publisher. And then one thing I really learned was that, like, inside a publishing house, you know, there's lots and lots of books getting published, right? And so the really, I guess the fortunate thing is when, you know, someone, you know, I was really fortunate to that the head of sales picked it up and, you know, Karen Murray is so incredible, really resonated with her. And so, and then, you know, someone at a bookstore would read it and it would resonate with them and so forth. And so it was just kind of the right people at the right time. And I think, I don't like to say the word lucky, but I do feel really, really fortunate that certain people picked it up and they're just humans, right? As I think we often think about this process as like big publishing houses and big bookstores and processes. But to be completely honest, like every single, the almost every single thing that happened was, could really be linked back to one person or a person somewhere picking it up and reading it. And for whatever reason, it resonated and then them doing things. And so I guess, you know, coming back to the very beginning, and I want to make this less personal and more something that would be actually be useful, because that's probably not very useful, is that from the beginning, I think, you know, the agent that I sent it to and knowing that he kind of got me and got the book, that was almost like a catalyst for other people who were aligned liking it and reading it. So, and this kind of comes back to the first question too, like what was the best decision you ever made? And one of the best decisions I ever made was being myself and being really me for the first time really in my whole life. And as soon as I was really me and chose people based upon just that, just when I sat down and spoke to them, could I just be my stupid, quirky, often, you know, over thinking, over emotional, you know, self? Can I be that person with them? And if I could, and it felt like a chain reaction from there. So I'm trying to think about saying it in the most useful way, in that, you know, if you're out there in whatever step of your journey, and this is going to sound real, I don't mean it to sound kind of esoteric or anything, but, or, you know, people always say, you know, be yourself and you'll attract, you know, like kind of stuff. But as soon as I started the journey and started to surround myself with people who I felt very relaxed with and who seemed to really get the book, they in turn knew people who were similar, who knew people similar, who knew people similar. And that was kind of domino. And so I think if you can get that right, then that can help.
Very good advice. We are back to another craft question. What was the greatest lesson in craft you learned through the writing of that first novel? And has it changed your process for the next one?
Yes, that is a really good question. Yes, I think that, and this is actually something that I probably had to realize before I sent my book. And again, like this is just me, right? I can only speak from me. But craft-wise, I realized very quickly that a really beautifully crafted paragraph does not make a novel. As a beautifully crafted chapter maybe doesn't write a novel, make a novel, you know. And I think part of the difficulty is, like, I guess that's where Kill Your Darlings comes in, right? That I had to get a lot better at being really honest with myself. And something could be very lovely, But does it work in the novel? 80% of the time, probably not. So I think I had to get quicker at turning that over so that I wasn't taking time figuring out how I could fit it in, fitting it in, and then realize that it wasn't working, trying to make it work, realizing again it wasn't work, and then looking back and thinking, God, I just spent, weeks trying to figure out how to fit this thing into a book where it doesn't fit just because I like that one little bit. And so I think I had to start getting a lot more honest with myself and just letting it go. Well, it's easier said than done, right? But, you can spend a week crafting a sentence, or whatever, and sometimes it's not going to be in the book because it's just not right. And so I had to try and get quicker at acknowledging when something wasn't working too. This isn't working. It's not working. Get rid of it.
It's a great distraction too, to focus on perfecting single sentences or paragraphs while nothing else in the book is happening. I think we've all made that mistake.
If I can just get this one sentence right, everything will be okay. That's right. And I think that, talking about that distraction, I think that it can distract you from the problems of a text as well. I think the times that I was distracted by trying to make something work, I was often trying to distract myself from bigger problems. And I had to get really honest and go, look, and you're often the only person at some stages of writing who is there, right, judging it. So I don't think I'm quite there yet. Maybe if I write 20 more novels, maybe I'll start to get a bit better. But I think the other thing that I am doing to talk specifically, I'm putting more work in the beginning, not the beginning of the novel per se, but I'm putting more work in before I start really writing. That's just for me, because I found that with the first one, I had to, when I kind of let myself write and write and write, I often had to come back and spend a lot of time fixing things or thinking, well, what is that scene actually about, or why is that there, or what does she actually want, or what actually is that character's backstory? Why would they do that? So I'm trying to put a little bit more kind of intellectual investment into and puzzle, solving in the beginning, so that hopefully, and I'm sure there'll still be huge amounts of editing and huge amounts of overhaul, but even if there's like 10 or 15, 20% less because of some work done earlier, just because I'm, a little bit limited in, as we all are at the time you write, then I think that's the main difference.
Love those. I love this next question too. Do you have any rules you follow as an author out in the world? Like, do you always share content online, or do you send thank yous to anyone? Things like that.
And I thought that was good too. And it made me think, oh, maybe I should have some rules. I don't know. and then I guess sometimes we have rules and we don't know, right?
Yeah.
Or we have like little things that we think are good manners almost.
Yeah.
Like just
the general approach.
General approach. So yeah, I often try, I think with say like Instagram reviewers, one of the things that I really noticed is people will reach out and they'll thank me. Initially, when I was sharing Instagram reviews, I'm like, oh my God, it's so self-indulgent. Like, look at this writer. She's showing an Instagram review. Like, how cringeworthy, that's something that you have to deal with, I think, as a writer. But I think on some level, sometimes they'd reach out and say, thank you so much for sharing, because it gets their name out there as well, and I'll tag publishers and, there's people who are looking at who are writers themselves, or they might be other publishing houses, and they might think, hey, I'm going to send this person some books. And so I think thinking about the process is a little bit more of a web is a good rule for me. It's not all about me. We all know that. and just to kind of think about how the process can, I guess, include and benefit other people. So if you're at a writer's festival, You know, especially if, you know, there's new programmers or new directors or, you know, all that kind of stuff. Just giving them a shout out and often a very well-deserved thanks publicly, I think, is the right thing to do. It's hard with sharing content because I think I very quickly decided that I was going to use my Instagram almost as a website. So I kind of see it as the place that people can come like you would a website back when websites came out and find out information and see things. And once I started to think about my Instagram page like that, I felt a lot less like an idiot. Not completely. I haven't lost that at all. I often post and delete things because I feel like they're incredibly self-indulgent, and some of it probably still is, to be honest. But I try to think about it as a website, right? And, you know, when I looked at other people's, like sports people or filmmakers, or, you know, when you look at their Instagram, I'm like, they're, you know, they're posting all this stuff, and so I'm going to really try to just embrace it.
You got to embrace it.
And do that. And so therefore, to answer that question, I do try and share kind of content which adds to the narrative and the world. It's like world building, right? Instagram's a world, like a website is, about information, and it is that kind of web of people, which is really nice as well. And the only other thing that I, you know, have really, it's probably one of the most special and life-affirming, creatively affirming things is, and I know that people have done this years and years before us as well, is being amongst the crew of debut people who are coming out that year. And so I do, you know, I think we all have a little bit of a rule where if we ever see each other's books, we'll photograph it and send it in the post so that everyone kind of has
in the post,
in the I wish we were all hilarious.
Yeah, that would be gold.
That would be nice. But I think that's the other thing, awesome. Is that we try to look out for each other. We try to be each other's eyes and ears. If you're looking for a next good read, like if you look at the hashtag debut crew 2023 or any other year for that matter, you know, I know 2024 is always already up and running. Just the talent and the humanity of the writers, and I just freaking love it.
The community is so great. And I want to put in here too that I got a message from Madeline Cleary, who has already started Debut Crew 2025. And on the pod, we'll be sharing posts about that. But if you are a 2025 debut, you should get in touch with Madeline Cleary.
That is awesome. Megan, you have given us a heap of advice already, but we have a specific question about advice. What is either the best piece of advice you've received or the best advice you would give to an aspiring writer?
That's a million-dollar question, isn't it?
We get contradictory answers for these.
Yeah, right.
So there's like the pressure is off.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I mean, look, and that's it. There's no right or wrong answers to these things, right? So I'll start with, I'll try to answer these two relatively quickly. So when I was a lot younger, I went to this dinner once, and I, you know, like I grew up in your pretty stock standard meat and three veg kind of, you know, suburban Australian thing. And I went out to this like fancy dinner, and I didn't know how to do anything. And, you know, didn't know which way to go for my bread or my drink. And, you know, people were teaching me how to make D's and B's with my hands and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And the woman next to me said at the beginning of the dinner, she said, "What's a 10-word sentence where no word is more than two letters?" She goes, "I'll leave that with you." And I'm like, you know, I was 18, and I'm like, you know, that little competitive thing in my, like, oh, I'm going to solve this by the end of the dinner. So, of course, you know, all the way through dinner, that's all I could think about, you know, what is this sentence? And, of course, by the end, I said to her, "I don't know. I've been trying to think about it, and I can't come up with anything." And she She said to me, if it is to be, it is up to me. And I don't think at the time I fully appreciated the weight of that sentence. And I think, you know, so often it can be terrifying being an artist on in any capacity because it is up to you. You know, it is all on you. I mean, when you're writing a book or you're writing music by yourself, and that can be terrifying and overwhelming. But the way that she said it to me was in a really liberating, empowering way. And I've always remembered that. And I think that at the times when I have not known what to do and I haven't kind of had faith in myself or you know, I'm thinking if this is all on me, we're pretty fucked. Like, I have no idea what I'm doing. This isn't going to work. And I think at those times I've tried to, you know, to think about advice that I would give a writer, which is always a bit, you know, who am I to give advice, really? But it is that the beauty of, I think, writing and it being often you sitting at a desk with a blank piece of paper is you're also the only one who knows what works for you. And so the only thing that I would say worked for me personally is find what works for you, trust that, and trust yourself. Because I think anyone out there can write a book, write a novel. It is really just, I guess, hard work. It's just really, really hard work, and it's time. And I think it's, you know, to that sentence, if it is to be, it is up to me, said to me that I just need to figure out at this point in my life, like, what works for me, both time-wise, both craft-wise, and what's not working for me. And I think that would be the other piece of my advice, is that sometimes the best thing I think we can do is look for, well, what's stopping me at the moment? Like, if it is to be, it's up to me. And so it's also up to me to figure out how to get stuff out of my way. And so, you know, for me, it was back when I really started writing, I didn't really have enough time. And so I thought, you know, that's my number one barrier at the moment is really time. So how do I, because I'm responsible for this, how do I respond to that? Can I, you know, ask a mum to hang out with the kids for an hour or two? Can I put them in activity and write while they're doing that? You know, so it's about being thinking outside the square a little bit and kind of going, what's my greatest barrier and how do I get rid of that for a certain amount of time? And so I think whilst it all being up to us can be really overwhelming, it's also really empowering because we also then have the power to remove the things that aren't working and to put in place the things that we know really work for us.
I think both Kate and I have probably written that down. Have you written it down, Kate? I saw you counting the words, which is exactly what
right.
I was
saying. Oh, my gosh, Jackson. How embarrassing.
You were right. No, it was all there. Yep,
it was
every
on.
Word
I just
accounted for.
I should have checked.
Perfect.
Megan, we're at the final question, the one we end all our interviews on. And that is, do you have a recommendation of a book by a debut author? Can be from any time, any year, any genre, any country, any place.
Oh, can it be any time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a newbie.
Oh, okay. I feel like I should mention newbie, but I'm going to mention something else because it is one of my all-time favorite books and I don't think it gets kind of the coverage it wants. My favorite debut book was written by, I think that she was in her 70s as a debut, and that's the other reason I love it. So it's called Eye for Isabel by Amy Whiting. And she did end up winning Age Book of the Year just before she passed, actually. But Eye for Isabel is, for me, one of the greatest books in Australia. I mean, you know, whatever. But for me, it's one of my personal favourite Australian books, and it's just stunning. And I highly recommend it. It's a short-ish read, and for me, it's just perfection in between pages. So, yeah.
Perfect. And Megan, thank you so much for across this whole year and whole season for being so open with us and for sharing your first time ride with us and with all of our listeners who we know have loved hearing from you and following this journey, although I hate using the word journey, but we all know we have to use it.
I know.
So much. Like it's such huge congratulations to you in your debut year for The Heart is a Star. It's been a huge year, and we know that it's going to be another huge year or two coming up. Do you want to just briefly tell us and our listeners who haven't already seen the news on Instagram what is happening for you and your new book?
Oh, yeah. So I'm working on a new book. So I have signed for another two with Catherine Milne at HarperCollins. My next book is called The Anatomy of Tears, and it's about pain. It's about the link between loneliness and pain, and about how we can often find hope in the most unlikely of places. And it takes inspiration from the fact that tears photographed under a microscope have a different structure for different emotions, different reasons that they're shared, and they look very different.
Oh, wow. So that's cool. That's fascinating.
When cool. can we expect to read this book, Megan Rogers?
Not until 2025, unfortunately. But
that's okay. We can wait.
It'll be worth the wait.
It's not. But yeah, I think that from all accounts, it'll be the end of 2025.
That is so exciting. Such good news. And what a high to go out on for this, our final episode of this year's Follow a First Timer series.
You can find the show notes for today's episode on our website, thefirsttimepodcast.com. Get in touch with us via Instagram or Twitter at @thefirsttimepod, or you can leave us a message on the website. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to The First Time Podcast. We record this podcast virtually on the unceded lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past and present, and we extend that to our First Nations guests and listeners. Sound production by Phoebe 80, who we can employ because of the wonderful support of our patrons via Patreon. Thank you so much for making this podcast possible.